Blog Talk Radio.
Marks another edition of This Week in Oncology. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Greg Masters. And joining me, as always, in the virtual booth today is my partner and cohort, Dr. Richard Just. Rich, you still with us?
I'm still here and happy to be here.
And originating from beautiful downtown Escondido, California. And we're up top here in Marin County today. And we have a great show in line for you today. Just when you're in intention, things just happen and show up, and life just kind of flows with the intention in the cosmos, so to speak. So there you have it. We're going to talk to Dr. Mary Hardy today, and let me tell you about Mary Hardy before I hand it over to Rich. She is the former medical director at the Sims Mann UCLA Integrative Oncology Program. A member at the UCLA Collaborative Centers for Integrative Medicine, co-director, Integrative Medicine Health and Wellness Program, Venice Family Clinic, member, consortium for Academic Health Centers for Integrative Medicine, and a board member of the Society for Integrative Oncology. Dr. Hardy is a board certified in internal medicine and a specialist in botanical and integrative medicine. She's actively combined complementary and alternative therapies with traditional Western medicine for many years. Dr. Hardy completed her internal medicine residency at Tufts New England Medical Center before studying medical ethics at Harvard Divinity School and Loma Linda University. Dr. Hardy was recruited by Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, where she founded and served as the medical director of a multidisciplinary integrative medicine program. Contributing to the national development of integrative medicine, Dr. Hardy serves as co-chairperson of the Clinical Practice Committee of the Academic Consortium of Integrative Medicine and is recognized as an authority on integrative medicine and natural products by organizations such as the Office of Dietary Supplements, the California Medical Board, the AMA, the American Pharmaceutical Association, the RAND Corporation, CBS, NBC, the Discovery Channel, and the LA Times. Now, that's exhaustive, so I hope we didn't leave anything out. So with that by way of background, I'm going to punt it over to you, Rich. Help us get to know Dr. Mary Hardy.
I'm out of breath, to tell you the truth.
Thanks, guys.
Dr. Hardy, that's really quite impressive. And I, the first time I met you was about a week ago, over a dinner conversation, and I was impressed out of my socks at your knowledge and your breadth of experience in this field. And as you know, we're trying to start an integrative oncology program in my practice, and so that all of your input I was trying to absorb as much as I could to help us get started. Is there anything that we left out that you can think of?
I think the thing you did leave out is how I got to start doing this. And I think that's really important because the people who led me to do this were my patients. And so I think they're the same people who are probably leading you to want to incorporate more of this into your practice as well. Most patients want to be seen as people who are getting well, not sick people who are maybe getting well, maybe not getting well. So I think we have to give our patients a lot of credit for the ways in which they lead us to refocus our thinking and get outside of the box and give them the tools they need to stay as well as they possibly can, even during something as challenging as cancer treatment.
Right. In fact, one of your first slides was why nutraceuticals? Mm-hmm. And your first point was exactly that. Mm-hmm. Patients with cancer desire to be active participants in their care. Mm-hmm. And I certainly have found that to be true over time. Mm-hmm. The biggest issue with me has been, ever since I've been in practice, which is now 38 years.
Mm-hmm. So you're still just practicing. Patients, you're not really done yet, right?
Yeah, right. I'm still learning. and this is a relatively new area for me, too.
Sure.
About half of the patients that I've treated over this time, when you bring up this subject, say, mm-hmm. I don't believe in it, you know, it's all hocus pocus, you know, uh-huh. blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
The other half is all for it, and why don't
right.
you provide it? You know, I mean,
right.
so mm-hmm. My big push has been, well, we'd only do things that are evidence-based.
Correct.
And there seems to be an increasing amount of evidence that's coming into the literature
mm-hmm.
that supports adding this to chemotherapy and radiation therapy,
mm-hmm.
also in terms of prevention of
mm-hmm.
tumors,
yep.
And in supportive care after treatment is completed,
mm-hmm.
so-called survivorship programs.
Absolutely.
So I wonder if you could comment on, with those three areas in mind,
sure.
Do recommendations differ? Do programs differ?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think they do.
Okay.
I think they do. So let's start with prevention first. And everybody would like to be given the magic pill that will take away their cancer risk, and they wouldn't have to really change their typical Western diet, et cetera, and their couch potatoing and their bad mental hygiene, et cetera, you know, staying in traffic, being stressed, et cetera. And it turns out that the best preventive tools are not in the doctor bag, they're in the patient bag. And so modifying diet so that you eat 5 or more servings of fruits and veggies a day, so that you exercise about 30 minutes a day, so that you basically stop smoking, drink in a very low amount, et cetera. These habits, you know, it's been stated that only about 5 to at a maximum 15% of cancers are 100% driven by genes. That means that 85 to 95% are an interaction of genes plus environment, and environment's the part that we can control, and environmental cues like a high-fat diet, smoking, et cetera, chronic inflammation, can drive cancer way past the body's ability to turn it off if you don't support these healthy habits. So that's one thing. So in a preventative way, you're looking at a lot of lifestyle changes, healthy eating, and exercise. But let's just take exercise. So you can kind of make sense that if you exercise and you maintain a normal weight, and you know, and exercise is a big part of that, you can see how that would be helpful. But do you think exercise has a place during active cancer treatment? Do you tell your patients, good, you're an unusual oncologist and patients should go to see you? Because most oncologists, the old-fashioned news was just rest, you're going to feel terrible, take it easy, don't get off the couch. And it turns out that that is not good advice. There's a series of studies done by a researcher at the Dana-Farber Center in Boston who showed that if patients, stage 3 cancer patients with colorectal cancer, if they exercise 30 minutes a day to 45 minutes a day, moderately strenuous, just walking, that they would improve their response of their tumors to the chemo. They would increase their disease-free interval, the amount of time in which they don't have cancer, and they would decrease their mortality. If that was a pill, it would be a billion-dollar drug. And that's something that if we don't have patients, if we don't encourage patients to do it and tell them how to do it and make it easier for them to do it, they won't. So that's, I think, just a small example of the benefit you can derive by paying attention. So that's prevention. Then there's during treatment. Now, I imagine that you struggle with some of the side effects of the chemotherapy you give.
Very much.
Effects. So what are some of the side effects that you find really challenging for you and for your patients?
Number one, nausea and vomiting.
Okay.
Number two,
okay.
Over the long haul, neuropathy.
Okay.
Number three, and if I had to re-rank them, I would rank this number one, would be cancer fatigue.
Cancer fatigue. So let's take the first one you gave me, nausea and vomiting. So there are great medications for nausea and vomiting, but they tend to have their own side effects, constipation, et cetera. Some people report feeling clouded by them. So three simple things that can really help nausea. Number one, a high-protein diet and multiple small meals during the day and eating earlier. So this is sort of the opposite of morning sickness, where you would eat later in the day and eat carbs. This is eat in the morning and eat protein. Secondly, ginger. Plain old ginger, a very common household spice, can be given as a ginger chew or a ginger candy, ginger tea, or it can also be given as a pill. And even as little as 1 gram a day of powdered ginger root in a capsule can help reduce nausea. And the third is acupuncture. And those are three very straightforward things to do that can make a big impact, especially on the second, third, fourth, fifth days, the sort of delayed or persistent low-grade nausea. So that's a good example of mitigation of treatment. You talked about neuropathy. Neuropathy, I think, is also can be very significantly mitigated by glutamine, by taking glutamine, and maybe acetyl-L-carnitine if it develops, alpha-lipoic acid. So there's some supplements that can be very useful in mitigating neuropathy, preventing it, and perhaps treating it. And then finally, in the survivorship, that's a lot about preventing the second cancer from happening. So for patients, we really want to protect them from these long-term side effects like neuropathy or fatigue. And oddly enough, we're back to exercise again if we talk about fatigue, because for breast cancer patients, if they do yoga during treatment or do this activity, this exercise, that has been shown to help mitigate their long-term possibility of fatigue. So, and then I think it's, again, as we go back into the survivor era, here we are back again at the same things we were using for primary prevention. Get your body weight down as close as you can to normal. Doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be below, let's say, a BMI of 27. So you can have a few extra pounds, but you can't be real overweight. Start to exercise regularly. Build up your muscle mass. Really eat those fruits and vegetables and eat a colorful variety. Your plate should look like a rainbow. And then do your work to reduce your stress or mitigate how you manage it. And so you just, it's a nice, you know, it's a nice circle, right?
Right. Actually, it was explained to me that integrative oncology is a three-legged stool.
Uh-huh.
With nutrition, exercise, mm-hmm. and stress mm-hmm. reduction being the three legs. And
right.
So exactly right that it's a circle.
Mm-hmm. And I think also there's a real place for targeted supplementation, rational supplementation, as maybe the final balance on that stool too. But clearly getting your nutrition in order, and people say, well, everything tastes funny, I really don't feel like eating. So then you have to be creative about how you help people get the calories and the dietary components they need. But you're right, you need nutrition, stress management, and exercise to feel
right.
well and to be well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I noticed as part of our discussion the other night,
mm-hmm.
You included L-carnitine in
right.
management of fatigue.
Acetyl-L-carnitine. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, can I talk a little bit about that?
Yes,
yeah,
that'd
so,
be great.
So carnitine is an amino acid that has been shown to help reduce fatigue in everything from animal models to other kinds of chronic chronic medical conditions, and some in cancer as well. And we like to give it as acetyl-L-carnitine because it's a little bit more bioavailable to the body, but the studies have shown that not only does acetyl-L-carnitine or particular L-carnitine help with fatigue, it also probably helps with kind of general well-being and may help support lean body mass. So a number of things become interconnected here. Enough protein to really protect lean body mass, enough nutrients to really fund the mitochondrial, the little energy set parts of the cell. That would be acetyl-carnitine and coenzyme Q10. And then enough activity to keep your muscles active and moving. You know, it's thinking about how you feel after you come back from a good walk where you've just really exercised your body and you just feel like, I feel well in this moment. You know, we were designed to be moving on the planet. And L-carnitine's also been shown to help a little bit with mood suppression in some of these studies. So where you might feel down, depressed, or really oppressed by your condition and then tired on top of that, this might be a nice way to start to relieve some of those symptoms for sure. So
great.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate those comments on that. One other big problem, and I just saw two patients who are going to be getting high-dose chemo radiotherapy protocols,
sure.
One with esophageal cancer and another with a metastatic adenocarcinoma of unknown primary source.
Challenging, very challenging. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm proposing all sorts of very aggressive chemotherapy regimens.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue of mucositis comes up. And,
sure, so irritation or swelling in the mouth, yeah.
Right,
so,
if you could comment on that.
I sure could. So so first of all, chemo radiation, this is like two punches, you know, one plus one not equaling two but equaling three, and that's the appropriate thing to do for these really aggressive cancers. Now, the areas of the mucous membrane lining the mouth and the esophagus, the tube going from the mouth to the stomach, are lined by a set of cells that grow and change rapidly. You can imagine they get worn down by all the food and everything that we pass by them. So when you give a hard, tough chemo, these cells will be affected like the hair cells are. So the hair grows all the time. That's why it falls out with chemo. These cells change all the time, and that's why a lot of chemo can really irritate this. So when we think about these mucus lining cells, they're called enterocytes, we want to support them. And their preferred fuel, for example, is glutamine. So we're back to the same amino acid that's real helpful for protecting against neuropathy, but now here it's the preferred food of these lining cells of the mouth. So that's the first thing I would do, is really make sure people take the glutamine, use it as a mouthwash, and then swallow it. I would also make sure they're having enough protein to repair normal tissue. That's super important, and don't lose a lot of weight. And there's a branched-chain amino acid formula that's really good for supporting lean body mass as eating potentially gets more difficult in these patients. Really important to do.
Mm-hmm.
Probiotics and other anti-inflammatories like curcumin or fish oil can also help mitigate some of the damage that's done to these normal cells with no demonstrated reduction in efficacy for the cancer cells. So these materials that we're talking about have some evidence for benefit and virtually no evidence for harm. There's a couple of cautions, like if your platelets are really low, you might not want to use fish oil, et cetera. But for the most part, you're back at trying to support the normal function of the normal tissue, right? So you're trying to keep those cells healthy while you punch the cancer in the nose. And that's the rationale, is going back and thinking about what will support normal function of normal cells. Even vitamin E has been suggestive that it would be helpful in this kind of situation. So that's how I would give your patients that much of a boost so that they can, again, be as healthy and strong and well as possible so they can then respond to treatment and take their full round of treatment. So I think you're going to do, if you can combine these things, your patients will do a lot better.
Okay, great. Well, that's great advice. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk mainly about breast cancer.
Okay.
One of the problems that I have is with black cohosh.
Oh, okay.
And what what I read and what I hear is that it's a phytoestrogen,
sure,
or plant-derived estrogen,
sure,
and therefore is contraindicated in patients with hormone receptor positive, especially in hormone receptor positive breast cancer.
Sure.
Yet we know that in a fair number of patients, it relieves hot flashes, which are not an uncommon complication.
Sure.
So how do you handle the issue of hot flashes? And because it's a very common problem that we face
very
every day
problem.
Of the week.
So I'm really glad you asked me about this herb. This is one of my favorite herbs. This herb is an American, a Native American herb. It grows here wild in our own country. So for once, we're not borrowing herbal therapies from someplace else in the world. But oddly, it was researched first in Europe. And that's where this problem with phytoestrogens first began. And I'm going to be real clear. Black cohosh is not a phytoestrogen. That's a mistake that got into the literature, and it's been perpetuated. So hence all this confusion. So the researchers who first started looking at this herb started looking at it in around 1950, and they didn't know of any other mechanism to control hot flashes except for estrogen type mechanisms. So when they were looking, they were using crude extracts, and so that's how the whole thing got started. But some very elegant work has been done in many different labs looking at binding. Does black cohosh and its active ingredients, does it bind to the estrogen receptor? And the answer has really uniformly been no. There was a single researcher who reported an estrogenic-like substance, but it turns out he retracted his study because he'd contaminated it with stuff from soy or other estrogen-containing herbs. So so no phytoestrogens present, doesn't bind to the estrogen receptor, and elegant work led by Dr. Norman Farnsworth, the late Dr. Norman Farnsworth, one of my botanical mentors and heroes at his botanical center at the University of Chicago, Illinois in Chicago. He and his center demonstrated that the way this works is by having an effect on neurons in the hypothalamus, in the temperature control center of the brain. So literally, this herb works by turning down the temperature at the very highest level of the brain, so not phytoestrogenic. And so I think if it's a well-prepared material, there's really only one or two extracts that I recommend particularly, but if it's a well-prepared extract and it's a safe extract, then you can, I think, with real impunity use it in your breast cancer patients. And that can be a debilitating side effect in young women, really debilitating.
Right.
Now, have you heard about the potential risk of hepatic failure and chemically induced hepatitis allegedly associated with black cohosh? Have you heard about that? Because that's
until
been
you told me about it the other day.
Right. So if you continue, and your patients will do this reading and they'll ask you the same kind of questions. So I figured I might as well knock this one out too. So there have been about 60 reports of hepatitis allegedly in association with allegedly black cohosh containing extracts. And it turns out that I was working, I was volunteering for the Government of Canada as a part of an external advisory panel for the Natural Health Product Directorate of Canada. And this issue came up in that panel. And the chair of our committee, an employee of the government, was really smart about this because he took, his name is Robin Marles, and he took the samples from the product that had been associated with adverse events in Canada and was able to demonstrate that it wasn't our black cohosh. It wasn't Actaea racemosa. It was a Chinese Actaea, a related but not the same plant. And this plant is known to have liver toxicity. So hence the importance of getting a very well-made, carefully controlled product so you don't have it adulterated with this cheap Chinese non-equivalent substitute. So again, people should find a very good product in order to be careful and should ask their pharmacist, ask their physician to help them find an appropriate product. So.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up as well, because some of the feedback that I've gotten over the years is, how do you verify the purity of what you're prescribing?
Mm-hmm.
And do you know where it comes from, and what's the source, and so forth? Do you have any preferences? I mean, I don't expect any names of products, but or companies, but.
So I'll tell you in general how I go about this. I think that, first of all, as an individual physician, there's no way that you personally can verify the accuracy of any given product, because you don't have a lab in your office to do this, and it's very specialized work. But what you can do is you can query the company you're interested in. You can ask them about their quality control practices. And quality control of botanical extracts begins in the field. Does the company that you're working with know who grows this, where they grow it, how they harvest, how they handle it? And then through the extraction process, the drying process, the manufacturing process, you want to be sure that they have safeguards in place so that they know the people, even if they're buying an ingredient from somebody else, that they know that they do the due diligence with the ingredient supplier, and that there are checks all along the way. So did the right plant get planted? Did it get harvested? Did it get handled properly? And even though you think you're buying A, did you have a process inside your manufacturing to be sure that if you think you got A, did you really get A? And so you're interested in seeing how robust that system is, how much testing they do, and how much they are intimate with the pedigree of what they're getting. And good companies can answer, you know, the 15, 20, 30 questions I have in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And so pretty much I go through that with the companies I'm interested in, and if I'm satisfied that their QA process is good, then I'm sure they'll be less likely to have an adverse mix-up in a supplement. And if there is one, it'll be found very early and prevented from getting into the patients. So that's, mm-hmm. I think, the best way to do it. So, yeah, I do have companies I prefer. Definitely.
Well, thank you for
that.
And
I'll tell you about that later. And you know some of the companies that I like. So, and they're usually people that are, you know, usually companies that are designed to service physicians. You know, the material they sell has a few ingredients, not 15 ingredients, and they're targeted for a particular substance for a particular use kind of thing. So paradoxically, mm-hmm. I usually like simpler products rather than very complicated products. So, because I think it's easier to assure the quality, the potency, and then to adjust the dose of a product like that. So that's at least one simple way to look at it. You know?
I understand also, again, changing slightly from the topic.
Sure.
But that you're a member of the board of the Society for Integrative Oncology.
I am.
And are you planning on going to Vancouver?
I am. Yes, I am. I think we're really excited about this year's conference. There's a nice, you know, the planning committee is in the middle of finishing setting the list of who's going to be coming, and we've gotten a jillion really great abstracts, so we're currently in the middle of choosing the abstracts that we're going to have for presentation at this year's conference. And the nicest thing about this conference, I would encourage anyone who has an interest in this area to go, because this is where you're going to find like-minded people with experience. And integrative oncology is a really new discipline. And so it's as if we're all in the middle of creating this discipline ourselves together. And so being able to have contact with your peer group is critically important. And if you're newer to this issue, then others will be happy to instruct you.
Well, that's great. We plan on being there. So
great.
That'll be terrific. Also, just as an aside, the
uh-huh.
SIO has uh-huh. evidence-based guidelines.
Yes.
Also,
on the website.
Okay.
On the website.
On the website. Right. That's great.
Lots of resources there.
Right.
And
well,
I helped prepare those.
Uh-huh. There you go. And what is that website for the society? Is it
If you look up Society of, if you look for up a Society of Integrative Oncology, you can find it really easily. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Okay, well, we want to thank our guest, Dr. Mary Hardy. Check out her website, maryhardy.com.
And, DrMaryHardy.com.
DrMaryHardy.com.